For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Durst Show. Before we get to Trump's legal issues, and we'll talk about several of them today, I want to comment on the passing of my friend Joe Lieberman. Joe and I were actually working together on a statement about whether or not supporters of Israel, like the two of us, could continue to support the Biden administration, continue to support Biden in the 2024 election, could continue to support Democrats. I had drafted the statement, and literally hours before Joe fell and ultimately died, he had amended it and made changes to it. And the two of us were working together on a joint statement just hours before he died. I then went to his funeral the next day. This is the And it was a great array of speakers at the funeral, family members, also Al Gore, the governor of Connecticut, the senators from Connecticut, etc. Joe Lieberman is an absolutely wonderful man. The only man in American history who was offered the possibility of running on the presidential ticket as vice president, both by the Democrats and the Republicans. I guess Dwight Eisenhower was also offered at least the possibility of running as a Democrat. He accepted the Republican. But Joe was, of course, the Democratic nominee for vice president under Al Gore. But then a few years later, he was offered at least there was discussion with him about running as vice president on the Republican a ticket. Ultimately, he didn't do that. But Joe always crossed over party lines. He was an American first, a Jew second, and a Democrat, seventh or eighth. He was a Democrat. He always ran for Democrat until he lost the Democratic primary to now Governor Lamont, who ran against him for the Senate. Lamont beat him in the primary, the Democratic primary, because the Democrats had moved left and Joe had moved to the center. Lamont was very left. But Joe decided to run as an independent. And he won. He won the election and served his last term in the Senate. He was a great, great man, just a wonderful man. Al Gore said he was the personification of the Yiddish term mensch, just a decent, decent guy who really everybody liked. I liked him so much. I liked his wife, who was very interesting. Oh, about 20 years ago, when he was in the height of his career, and maybe I was in the height of mine, a Jewish organization called Hadassah, which contributes to medical hospitals and stuff like that, decided to have a fundraiser. And the fundraiser was a debate between Joe Lieberman's mother and my mother, both of whom have now passed, but they were both, you know, in their 80s and very proud of their sons. And the debate was, who was a better Jew, Joe Lieberman or me? And my mother did her best and Joe's mother did her best. And finally, in the end, Joe's mother asked my mother, well, is your son completely kosher? And my mother, very upset, had to admit, no. And so Joe's mother won the debate. He was a better Jew than me. And he was a better everything than me. He was just great. And so I miss him enormously. And I just continue to wish his family well. He had a wonderful, wonderful family. And I was honored to be at the funeral among the mourners. So I wanted to comment about that. One more thing about Israel. So, by the way, I did write my article in any event using Joe's edited statement, published it in the Wall Street Journal on Friday. If any of you want to look at it, it's you can get it online. It's entitled something like Joe Lieberman's Last Words on Israel. And it's makes a strong statement about how you can't take us for granted. You know, Democrats can't any longer assume that if you're Jewish and pro-Israel, you're going to vote Democrat. That used to be the case, no longer the case. My vote is up for grabs. You have to earn my vote. I'm not decided who I'm going to vote for at this point. As I say in the article, and Joe agreed with this, Jewish supporters of Israel, unlike Muslims and Arabs in Michigan, we have somewhere to go. The Muslims and Arabs have nowhere to go. They're not going to vote for Trump. They're not going to vote for Bobby Kennedy, who's the most pro-Israel candidate out there. On the other hand, Jews like me and Joe, when he was alive, we had some place to go. We could have voted for Bobby Kennedy. He's a friend of mine. We could vote for no labels. And many Jews could vote for Donald Trump. So don't take us for granted. Don't assume that just because our parents and grandparents voted Democrat that we're going to vote Democrat. For many Jews, that's probably the case, but not for me. And it wasn't the case for Joe Lieberman. He was, of course, active in the No Labels movement. Turning to Israel, just one point about that. So Israel conducted an amazing, amazing raid and activity on the Shifa Hospital, the largest hospital in North Gaza. Israel had captured that hospital in the first days of the war and had cleared it out of Hamas fighters. But then the Hamas fighters came back, and Israel went back in a targeted surgical raid. Absolutely what the United States wants it to do. It put all the patients aside. It put the doctors in separate areas. It went in then and it killed 200 terrorists, 200 Hamas terrorists. And then it captured maybe another 300 or 400 suspects, some of whom will turn out to be Hamas terrorists, others Hamas sympathizers, some others perhaps not involved, and they'll be freed. But it was exactly what the United States wanted it to do, and it did it perfectly. And at least according to Israeli military sources, there were no casualties among patients or doctors. Obviously, that remains to be fully determined. But CNN condemned it. The New York Times condemned it. The Western world condemned it. Israel can do nothing right. If Israel does it, by definition, if it's wrong, if Hamas does it, for many people at least, it's right. So that's my view on the latest Israeli news. Oh, one more point. Today, Israel apparently, although it doesn't admit it, attacked a military building which was being used jointly as a consulate. It was right next to the Iranian embassy. The Iranians claim it was a consulate. The Israelis claim it was like a hospital, you know, the Hamas hospital like Shifra. It was disguised, you know, was originally built as a hospital, but it became Hamas headquarters. The same thing was true with the Iranian consulate. It was originally built as a consulate building adjoining the embassy, but it had been turned into a military operation. The proof of the pudding is that the Iranians acknowledged that five leading military people, including two very high military people, were killed. What were they doing in a consulate building? If you're the head of the military, you shouldn't be in the consulate building. You should be in a military base. It was obviously the consulate was being used as a cover. We know that embassies are used as covers too. And in a war, there's no protection specifically for embassies or consulates that are being used for military purposes. And again, surgical strike, apparently no innocent people were killed. Nobody in the embassy was killed. Just the people who were using the embassy as a cover for their military activities. Okay, turning to Trump news, as we seem to always do as a lawyer. Thank you, Donald Trump, for filling my life and my career with legal issues one after the other. If I were back teaching at Harvard, I could give a whole course just called Trump. I did write a whole book called Get Trump, which deals obviously with what's going on in New York, what's going on in Washington, D.C., in Florida, in Georgia. And I'm going to talk about New York and then talk about Georgia. So just hours ago, breaking news, the District Attorney of Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, who has brought the weakest criminal case perhaps in the history of American criminal cases. I mean, I've never seen anything so weak. It may win. It's still extraordinarily weak. it may win because the judge is an elected judge whose daughter works for the a political group that opposes Trump. You're not supposed to talk about his daughter. We'll talk about that in a minute. Yes, you are. So let's turn to that. So there's a gag order in effect now, which is probably unconstitutional. I think all gag orders are presumptively unconstitutional. They're prior restraint. They say you can't talk about something. That's what the First Amendment prohibits, prior restraint. That's the Pentagon Papers case that I was involved in 50 years ago. The Supreme Court established that you can't have prior restraint. If they did something wrong, you can punish them afterward, but you can't prevent them from speaking. And that's what prior restraint is, and that's what a gag order is. And the gag order didn't cover the judge, and it didn't cover the judge's daughter. And there was some evidence that the judge's daughter worked for a firm, a political company that lives and dies by supporting Democrats, and his daughter would benefit enormously if Trump were to be convicted and if the conviction were to result in his not being elected. And now the Democrats are all saying, oh my God, you can't talk about somebody's daughter. You can't talk about somebody's daughter. Have you ever heard of Clarence Thomas? Democrats are trying desperately to get Clarence Thomas recused from any case involving Trump or the election, not because of his activities, but because of his wife's activities. Either you can or you can't talk about daughters and wives, but you can't say you can't talk about Democratic daughters, but you can talk about Republican wives. My view is you can talk about both. You can talk about both. Judges should recuse themselves if their wives have a major stake in the outcome of an election or a case or anything like that. Same thing is true with daughters. We know that judges have to file forms, financial forms, and they include whether or not a daughter will benefit financially from the outcome of a case. Look, let's talk common sense. People do things for their children. People do things for their wives, but even more important, they do things for their children. I know I've done things for my children. I've made sacrifices for my children. If I were a judge and I knew my child would benefit enormously from a decision, no matter how hard I tried unconsciously, there would be a thumb, maybe an entire elbow on the scale of justice if I knew it affected my son. I made that argument when Scalia sat on the 2000 Bush versus Gore case, because everybody knew that Scalia's son would be appointed to a high position in the administration if Bush won the election. And I thought that was enough to recuse Scalia. And I think it's enough to recuse the judge in the Trump New York case if, in fact, his daughter would benefit from a conviction of Donald Trump. Now, there's another story, and it may not be true, and one has to look at it very carefully. There was a picture posted on a website that was characterized as the daughter's website, but maybe it wasn't, showing Trump behind bars. If that were in fact the case, that would be an additional ground for recusal. There's been a denial saying that she gave up that website some time ago and somebody else posted it. Well, you have a hearing and you find out whether there's any truth to that or not. But the idea that you can't comment on somebody's daughter is absurd. If there's a case involving millions of dollars, and if one side wins, the daughter gets hundreds of thousands of dollars, obviously that's something that a judge should be recused over. And we know that because the rules provide for that. The rules require that when there is a financial benefit to any close member of a family, both the appearance of bias and the reality of bias operate. And so there are so many reasons why there should be no prior restraint, no gag order prohibiting Donald Trump from commenting on the daughter of a judge who is an adult and who's involved in politics on behalf of Trump's opponents. It seems so logical. And yet you go on CNN and all the comments, oh, what a horrible thing, talking about a judge's daughter. These are the same people who are saying, oh, what a horrible thing, not talking about a judge's, a justice's wife. You know, the double standard, the hypocrisy, the shoe on the other foot test. It's so apparent that it's laughable. CNN just specializes in conflict of interest. And speaking of conflict, who's going to decide the issue of whether or not the gag order should apply to the judge's daughter? The judge is going to decide that. Isn't that a conflict of interest? The judge being asked to protect his daughter from attacks? I'm a judge. I'll do anything to protect my daughter from attacks. So, no, there's, again, just too much hypocrisy to contemplate here. And I would hope that maybe appellate courts can see through this hypocrisy. I hope and expect that if the gag order does extend beyond where it is today, Trump will appeal it. And he has a right to appeal it because it's a final order involving what he can say and what he can't say. It's not involving directly the case itself. So stay tuned. We'll see. Now we turn back to our favorite long-term subject, Fani Willis. So on Friday, the Trump defendants, he and I think nine others, officially appealed the judge's ruling in the case. The judge knew there was going to be appeal. And the appeal is a very, very strong one because the judge made findings of fact that should automatically result in the recusal of Fani Willis. The judge found that there were reasons to doubt her credibility. The judge suspected that she was being mendacious. The judge had a basis for concluding that the speech she made in front of a Black church was improper and unethical. So the record is just filled with facts from which a reasonable appellate court should conclude, my God, no, she can't continue to be involved in this case. What hangs over her is the heavy suspicion that she may be the person who should be on trial. My personal belief, she committed perjury. My personal belief, she committed conspiracy to commit perjury with her lover. My personal belief, if I were a judge, based on the evidence, I would have found that she did not pay back the money and the benefit she received from the thousands and thousands of dollars of trips. What I would have found is any prosecutor who knows that you have an obligation not to receive a nickel from anybody in your employ, if that lawyer had in fact paid back the money, she would have kept a record of it. Lawyers do that. I have my little notebook. I record everything in my notebook. I'm sure she has ledgers and notebooks and diaries. Not a single notation, not a photograph of the money being paid, not a withdrawal slip, not a deposit slip. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Let me tell you, I don't believe anything she said on that witness stand, and neither did the judge in the case. Now, so the appellate courts are stuck with a conclusion that she almost certainly lied, that she almost certainly committed a felony, but there wasn't enough to show that there was an actual conflict of interest and actual bias. There is enough. That's enough. There's enough. When in doubt, recuse in a situation like this involving the man running for president of the United States. No, he's not above the law. But the public has to have trust and faith in the outcome of the case. Will anybody in Georgia or anywhere else have any trust in the discretionary decisions made by the prosecutor in this case? Right now, she is full-time CYA, covering her own backside. She is in trouble. If there were a reasonable prosecutor with authority in the case, they would, of course, open up a criminal investigation of her and of Nathan Wade, because the evidence is overwhelming, but certainly enough for probable cause to conduct a grand jury. And with that state of the record, I would really think that an appellate court should. I'm not saying it will. You know, courage is not an attribute that judges have often. This judge had a little bit of courage. He did make some findings that were very damaging to the elected district attorney, but he didn't have the courage to go all the way. Maybe he wanted the appellate courts to do it for him because he made enough of a record for the appellate courts, if they were wise, to say, no, this case can't proceed with Fannie Willis, in charge of the prosecution. It just creates far too much of an appearance and a reality of conflict of interest. So we'll wait and see if the appellate courts do the right thing. All right, let me look at some letters. Got a lot of letters today. Where's the ACLU? Where are the liberals? RICO is everywhere. I agree. Where is the ACLU? Where are the liberals? Where are the people who came to believe in justice? Why am I the only Democrat, the only former member of the ACLU who seems to care about justice for Donald Trump? Just because it's Donald Trump and you don't like him, you're going to vote against him? Where is the ACLU? They defended Nazis and Skokie. They defended communists, but not Donald Trump, because they'll lose money. They will lose support from their contributors if they defend Donald Trump. It's as easy as that. Also, the ACLU has been taken over by leftist radicals who care less about civil liberties than they do about the outcome of the case. Does it satisfy our political ideology? This is an interesting one. The Kennedys, about Bobby Kennedy. The Kennedys always run at the wrong time. Edwin ran against Carter. I was involved in that campaign. It wasn't the wrong time, it was the right time. The Democrats just didn't have the sense to understand that they might very well have won the presidency. It would have been a close election, Ted Kennedy versus Ronald Reagan. But Jimmy Carter didn't have a chance. And they leave out one thing. Joe Kennedy, my friend and former student, ran for the Senate against another Democrat, Markey, and lost. And that really ended his political career. He's now an appointee of the Biden administration in Northern Ireland. He's a great guy and very, very smart and kind of more centrist than many of the Democrats today. But he, too, perhaps made the wrong decision and ran at the wrong time. Well, but I don't think the Kennedy name has lost its luster. I think Bobby Kennedy, he's doing very well in the polls. The polls 13% in a number of states, enough to really influence the outcome of the election. Your recent broadcast from Israel were the most interesting, emotional, and factual of any news or any coverage of the war and the Israeli reaction. Your journalistic chops are revealed. Not a surprise. Thank you so much. I felt it. I hardly could hold it together when I was speaking in front of the pictures of all these 18 and 19-year-old kids with enormous futures in front of them. Among them could have been the person who cured cancer, who cured heart disease, who cured diabetes. It was like, for me, mini Holocaust, and knowing that these young girls were raped, some of them in front of their husbands, and the young boy who was beheaded, whose father told me, and I've confirmed it, that his head was removed to Gaza and sold, put on sale for $10,000. Fortunately, the Israelis retrieved it, and his father was allowed to bury his 19-year-old son along with his head. It was so emotional for me there, but for the grace of God, go I, because Hamas wasn't distinguishing between liberals and conservatives, Americans or Israelis. If you're a Jew, they were going to kill you. If you were a Jewish woman, they were going to rape you. We now know that rape was not just accidental. There was somebody who confessed to the rape and said, oh, the devil made me do it. No, the devil didn't make you do it. Hamas made you do it. It was part of Hamas's plan, according to the New York Times, and confirmed by even a study done by the United Nations. So it was emotional, and I was proud to have been able to be there and to show my respect. But as I said when I was there, this is not a monument only to Jews who were killed. It's a monument to a dying civilization. because so many people now support Hamas, including so many people who want to know better. Okay. What would be the reaction if the totally despicable, undescribable atrocities of October 7th were inflicted on any other country but Israel? Well, it happened. It happened in the United States. You can't compare atrocities, but, you know, we lost so many people in 9/11, and we didn't constrain our activities. We went in full force and did a lot, and ultimately, you know, destroyed ISIS and destroyed many others. Bernie Sanders is posting videos claiming that Palestinian children are dying of starvation. Maybe Alan should post a video calling Sanders out. Well, let me tell you, I think I mentioned I was with the head of the Mossad. I was with the attorney, the prime minister of Israel. I was with the former attorney general of Israel as well. And it was with the president of Israel and military leaders. And I can tell you, based on my reputation, there is no famine in Gaza. It is a fraud. There is enough food in Gaza to keep every person in Gaza alive. Hamas is stealing as much of the food as it can. When Israel raids the tunnels and raids these Hamas headquarters, they find sacks and sacks of flour and food and drink. Hamas is stealing. Hamas wants there to be a famine, but there is no famine. There's enough material coming in. It doesn't mean they're getting three meals a day. No, maybe they're getting only two meals a day. Maybe even only one meal a day, but enough to stay alive. It is Ramadan after all, and they are supposed to fast. During the day, most religious Muslims only have two meals a day during Ramadan, one before sunset and one after sunset. And I'm not trying to mock any religion. I fast on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av and other Jewish holidays. And there is a shortage of food and there is hunger. But let me tell you, the pictures of the children who were allegedly died of malnutrition, I know were fake. The children died, but they all had pre-existing conditions and were going to die. But imagine if it was true that children died of malnutrition while their parents were eating and drinking. Whose fault is that? Why should a child ever die of malnutrition when there are parents who have food, parents who are eating? You see videos of the stalls, the food stalls with fruits and vegetables and grain. There is enough food. It's only the problem of how it gets distributed and how Hamas tries its best not to distribute it. So yes, I'm calling out Sanders and I'm calling out CNN and I'm calling out every other institution that insists on lying about the actual circumstances. Gaza is a hellhole. It's a hellhole because Hamas made it a hellhole. It could have been the Singapore and the Mediterranean. When Israel left in 2005, it left behind agricultural equipment, hothouses. Fortunes of money were sent to Gaza. I know. I spoke to the Emir of Qatar about it personally, and I spoke to the other people in Qatar, and I spoke to the people on the receiving end of the money and food that was going to Gaza from Qatar. Where did it all go? Tunnels, rockets, didn't go to food. It didn't go to education. It didn't go to medical care. Yes, Gaza is a hellhole. It's a hellhole caused by Hamas. Hamas was in trouble, was in charge, and Gaza was in trouble before Israel sent a single troop in there. And it wasn't because of the Israeli blockade. The Israel blockade was letting through all kinds of food. It was because the food and the resources and the medical and everything else that was coming into Gaza was being stolen by Hamas. Some of it sold, the rest of it just consumed. How do you think they got the concrete to build 300 miles of tunnels? You know how much concrete is needed to do that? Do you know how much money is needed to build those tunnels? And they did it. They could, every penny of that could have been used to educate. Every penny to feed, to give medical care, but Hamas doesn't care about the people of the Gaza. Israel cares more about them than Hamas does. Oh, this is a nice letter, so I'll read it. Oh, no, let me start with a negative one. Old men struggling to keep their power. Don't you have a fishing pole? My grandson is the fisherman in the family. And then on the next page, this man is remarkable. He's no spring chicken, but he's a sharp attack as it gets around. I applaud his ability to teach and explain his opinions in a way we can all understand. So I'm not going to get a fishing pole. No, I do fish with my grandson occasionally, but that's not my life. My life is my work and my ability to defend the Constitution. Your honesty and integrity continues to make you a genuine hero of mine. Ever since I was about 14 in the 1970s, we live in different times, etc. People like you are rare in today's world. Kudos. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then another nice one. You are the legal conscience of America. Well, America needs a legal conscience. America needs somebody objective who's willing to look at all the facts without regard to partisanship. If I can serve in that function for a few more years, I'm happy to do it, knowing that I will get lots of criticism for it as well. But that's the name of the game. By the way, not only do I get criticism, but members of my family do. That's part of the game. If you were a founding father, how would you correct the problem of politicized judges, attorneys general, DAs, jurors? Very simple. I would revoke Jacksonian democracy and stop electing judges. Stop electing district attorneys. All judges and all district attorneys should be selected on the merits, based on their history, based on their accomplishments. And there should be term limits, even to the Supreme Court, 20-year term limits to the Supreme Court. But no elections and no politicization of judges or DAs. Judges and DAs have to be kept out of politics. We'll talk about that in days to come. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.